The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So continuing this reflection on becoming a refuge, you know, this simile or this analogy of the path, of keeping the path clear, a path in the woods, a path in the forest, keeping a path clear. Others have been traveling this path, keeping the path clear. And that is a kind of, we take refuge in them as we walk the path because they have kept it clear for us. So kind of consciously reflecting on that, others have kept this path clear for us, is a way of taking refuge in the Sangha. But we become a refuge as we walk the path, as I just mentioned, that we are also keeping the path clear by walking the path. And so we can't not be a refuge for others. We become a refuge for ourselves by walking this path, and we become a refuge for others. So this is a piece, the piece that I'd really like to explore today, is what it means to become a refuge. The Buddha, in a couple of places in the suttas, talked about becoming a refuge. And you know, the language is to become a refuge for ourselves, and to Ananda, the Buddha says, each of you should remain with yourself as an island, yourself as a refuge, without anything else as a refuge. Remain with the Dhamma as an island, the Dhamma as your refuge, without anything else as a refuge. And how does one remain with oneself as an island, with the Dhamma as an island, with oneself as a refuge, with the Dhamma as a refuge? There is a case where one remains focused on the body in and of itself. The body is a body, ardent, alert, mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. One remains attending to contemplating feelings, mind, mental qualities, ardent, alert, and mindful. This is how one remains with oneself as an island, with the Dhamma as an island, with oneself as a refuge, with the Dhamma as a refuge. For those who, now or after I am gone, remain with their self as an island, their self as a refuge, with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge, they become the highest of those who desire training. So this is pointing to the act of practice. That is, as the highest refuge, the act of practice, doing the practice, is actively taking refuge and creating refuge. To me, that's beautiful. It's a beautiful inspiration. And you know, Gill has often said, you can't just practice for yourselves. It's not possible, actually, to just practice for yourself. But there are times where it feels like the focus, you know, that we are exploring our own experience. So the four foundations of mindfulness are the refuge, taking refuge, and creating refuge. We understand our experience. We open to our experience. And that... it does so many things. I mean, the freedom from our own, you know, the practice of the four foundations of mindfulness begins to point us to the freedom from our own greed, aversion, and delusion, our own reactivity. We attend to, we turn to, we open to our reactive states of mind, and we see that there's a difference between being caught by those reactive states, engage with them, kind of stuck in them, and being aware that they're happening, or even being aware that we're caught by them, that there's a freedom that happens there, a feeling of loosening, of not being so kind of tied into the tangle of that, of that reactive state. And that freedom is a kind of a pointer to that refuge. That we see the awareness of experience creates a whole different perspective on experience and allows us a place of ease and peace that is a kind of a taste, a little taste of that refuge. And so that is making ourselves a refuge. You know, we that the Buddha says in other places, he says that we can't rely on others. You know, we do take refuge in others in terms of, in the Sangha, we take refuge in terms of receiving the teachings, and we need that. But we can't just sit and listen. We have to engage. A famous quote from the Dhammapada. I'll read this whole thing because it's a beautiful section. Just this is the path. There is no other to purify vision. Follow it, and that will be Mara's bewilderment. Mara is the embodiment of delusion, the embodiment of the one who tangles us into our knots. Just this is the path. And I love that language. Thanissaro Bhikkhu wrote this translation. Just this is the path. To me, that points right directly into the present moment. Just this moment, this experience, just this. The four foundations of mindfulness right here, right now in this moment. Just this is the path. Following this path, you put an end to suffering and stress. I have taught you this path, having known, for your knowing, the extraction of arrows, the extraction of suffering. It is for you to engage. It is for you to engage ardently. The Buddhas simply point the way. Those who practice will be freed. So again, pointing to this need for personal engagement. We have to engage for ourselves. And this, to me, comes back to make yourself an island, make yourself a refuge. And it actually uses in the suttas, in the Pali, it uses the term atta for self, which is, you know, this is one of the few places in the suttas where this word atta is used in a positive way. Normally, atta is used in the way of being caught, of being identified. But in this case, I think, and Bhikkhu Bodhi says, you know, the obvious thing that he's pointing to here is that you have to rely on yourself for freedom. Nobody else is going to give it to you. That the action, the agency of engaging comes from within. It is for us to strive, for us to engage ardently to free the mind. No one else can do it. The Tathagatas, the Buddha, simply point the way. That's like, you know, saying the Buddha sitting there pointing, saying, here's a path in the woods. Yes, there it is. And we have to get on that path. We have to take the steps. We have to walk the path. And so this frees ourselves, you know, the practice of walking that path, of exploring our experience. We get little tastes of that refuge, little tastes of that possibility for having ease within the craziness of reality. Not dependent on what's happening. A letting go of wanting things to be other than they are, and yet that not meaning that we don't act or engage. And this very act of freeing our own minds of these habits and tendencies, you know, part of the way this clears the path for others or supports others, part of the way we become a refuge doing this is not only that we keep the teachings alive by walking the path, we keep the path open. But we become different. We become more more of a I don't know what the right word is. We become a person who is no longer caught, even for just moments, that we have some capacity to not simply react out of our habitual tendencies, where we see a kind of a reaction arising and we hold our tongue and we don't lash out at somebody, or we offer a smile to somebody rather than kind of just being absorbed in our own world, and we connect through kindness and care with others in the world. And so this is a way too. The qualities that we cultivate in our mind as the mind begins to let go of greed, aversion, and delusion, those qualities are felt by others. And so we become a refuge, in that we become a place where people don't have to be quite so afraid in our presence. We engage ethically, that we're engaged with ethical conduct, engaged with non-harming as a key component to our path. This supports everyone, not only people who want to walk the path behind us, but everyone. And it does create a kind of a contagion of beauty, because metta and compassion are, they tend to create the conditions for more metta and compassion, not only in our own hearts and minds, but in others. And we know this. When somebody comes with us, to us, with a smile and openness and connection, it tends to open our own hearts too. So this is another way that we become a refuge. In one reading, I was reading a little bit about the refuges in the last days. This morning, reading something by Nyanaponika, and he pointed out that taking refuge in the Sangha was taking them as a model for emulation. Taking those who have engaged or are engaged in the path, taking them as role models. And so as we take others as role models, we become role models ourselves. This notion of being a model or modeling the teachings is expressed in one particular teaching that's one of my favorites. It's in the Sutta Nipata. It's called the Atakavaga, the chapter of the eights. And, you know, the entirety of this teaching, it's a set of 16 poems, and it kind of has three aspects to it. Through the poems have three flavors, one of three flavors, or sometimes multiple, but there's three basic flavors. One is a description of somebody who is caught, the description of our human condition, basically. So that's one kind of poem. What happens to us as we stay mired in our habitual tendencies? And then another set of poems is a description of how or what it's like to be free from that condition, kind of the inspiring description of what it's like to have freedom from that. And then the third set of poems is, how do we get from one to the other? What's the training? What's the path? What's the path of practice? So I'll read just a little bit about some of the verses describing somebody who is free. I won't read all of them because I want to save some time for discussion. So I'll just read a few selected verses. So somebody comes to the Buddha and asks the Buddha, having what vision, being of what character is one peaceful? Tell me about the Supreme Person. And the Buddha responds, a person who is not angered, not frightened, not boastful, not fretful, who gives wise advice, who is calm, restrained in speech, who is a sage. A person who is not attached to the future, who does not sorrow over the past, who finds solitude amidst sense contacts, and is not guided by fixed views. A person who is retiring, not deceitful, not covetous, not greedy, not impudent, not arousing contempt, who does not engage in malicious speech. A person who does not relish pleasure, who is not arrogant, who is mild and of ready wit, who is not credulous, who by nothing is repelled. A person who is even-tempered, ever attentive, who does not suppose that in the world there are equal, superior, or inferior, who is free of conceit. This is someone I call peaceful. Free, the sage, free of greed and selfishness. The sage regards nothing in the world as one's own and does not grieve because of what does not exist. So I think it's, this description is largely, there's a couple of pieces about this description of someone who is freed. It's described in terms of things largely that they don't do. You know, they're not angry. They are not covetous, not greedy, not arousing contempt. They don't engage in malicious speech. So there's some of it that's what they don't do. Some of it is kind of qualities of their mind, mild and of ready wit, even tempered. But those are the fewer, you know, fewer descriptions. So a couple of pieces about this. It's about what is let go of is where the refuge is where freedom lies, is what's let go of. And I forgot the other piece. Maybe it'll come back to me. So the description of someone who is on the path of practice, I'll just read this and then I'll reflect again. So the questioner this time asks, speak about the path of practice. The Buddha responds, a person should not have covetous eyes, should close one's ears to ordinary chatter, should not be greedy for flavors, should not cherish anything in the world, should be meditative, not footloose, should desist from worry, should not be indolent, should not fear blame, nor be conceited with praise. One should not be a boaster, nor speak scheming words. One should not be drawn into telling a lie, nor be deliberately treacherous. One should not despise others for their way of life or wisdom or precepts or practices. If ordinary people or ascetics irritate one with their talkativeness, one should not respond harshly, for the peaceful do not retaliate. Knowing the Buddha's teaching, an ever-attentive person who investigates it should train in it. Knowing the cooling of desire as peace, one should not be negligent in applying the teachings. With regards to the teaching, one who is diligent should constantly venerate it by following his example. And so consciously here pointing to, and to me this is, this description is, in some ways it's like you could take the description of a liberated person and put should engage or in front of every sentence. That's essentially in some ways what the path is. Should not be angered, should not be frightful, should not be boastful, should not be fretful, It's like the path of practice in this case is a description of an emulation of what it means to be free. And this is what the last phrase I read was: one should be diligent by following his example, by emulating those who are free. We become free. Now, there's an important piece to this emulation, and that is mindfulness, because it is not simply by externally emulating, but it is by emulating and noticing the rub, not just putting on something and saying, I'm going to emulate this. It's like putting on a mask or putting on a costume. But the practice of the emulation brings things up in our hearts and minds. It brings up resistance. It brings up fear. It brings up confusion. And that exploration is where the freedom begins to actually happen. And so the four foundations of mindfulness get embedded into this practice of emulation. We do our best to emulate and notice where it feels hard. And then we don't repress that, but we acknowledge it, we open to it. And so we can become a refuge by modeling the teachings of the Buddha, by engaging in I love this sentence from the first. If people irritate one with their talkativeness, one should not respond harshly, for the peaceful do not retaliate. To cultivate peace, act peacefully. The path and the goal are not separate. We walk the path. It's like the path reflects the goal in some ways. That we engage in the path through modeling the path. If you want to be peaceful, act peacefully. If you want to be kind, act with kindness. If you want to be compassionate, act with compassion. And notice the rub, because there will be a rub. Notice where there's a struggle there.